Apple Music is getting an update, and not a second too soon. Now you can find anyone with just a picture of their face, but should you? And a few tech stories about drones and organs and robots. All that and a whole lot more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1506, recorded Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/TNT and join Trunk Club today.
And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all of the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
Well, hello there. This is Tech News Today, the show where we talk about technology news.
We do.
With people who are passionate about technology news. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. I'm not counting, but day five of having this horrible, annoying gum on my teeth, and I can't wait to get it off. It's just always in the way. It's getting in the way of tech news now, and that depresses me.
But your teeth are healthy, and your future is bright.
I don't know about that, but we'll see when I check in on Friday. Let's talk about some tech news and not my dental situation.
Okay.
YouTube is reportedly working on a subscription service called Unplugged, according to Bloomberg News. On tap would be a bundled selection of traditional cable channels if YouTube can secure deals with the major carriers, that is. NBC Universal, CBS, 20th Century Fox, and Viacom are all part of the discussions at this point. Nothing apparently is locked down. The cost would be targeted right around $35 a month, I'm assuming, and YouTube aims to get this launched sometime in 2017. So this is the new wave that we're experiencing right now, the move from traditional TV to traditional TV on the internet.
Yeah.
Which is basically the same thing.
Exactly. It's a bundle. I don't want the bundle. I want to be unbundled.
Yeah. I mean, does it sound exciting to you?
Getting
your TV through YouTube?
It's something. I mean, the bundle or the unbundle, like picking and choosing the services, that's kind of getting out of hand right now. Like I have HBO Now, that's $15 a month. Netflix is $8 a month. Amazon Prime is $100 a year.
Yep.
And I still don't have everything. So I guess there needs to be a different solution. I don't know if this is the one.
And I don't know if we're going to get a different solution. Like for the longest time, the demand, the thing that people wanted was a la carte. Don't make me pay for all these stations that I'm never going to watch. You know, you get a cable subscription, you get a million channels, you only ever watch five of them. Just let me pay for the five. But it turns out, you know, there is a pay structure in place in this industry. So even though it seems like we're getting the choice to do the things that we're hoping for, enabling, you know, using the internet to get this content as opposed to getting it through traditional cable or satellite or whatever, they're still doing the bundling. They're still kind of roping a bunch of channels and or networks in on the deal that maybe you aren't as interested in to get more distribution for those. And I mean, when you add it all up, like it just really ends up paying the same, if not more, I would imagine, if you wanted to get similar access to the things you actually want to watch.
And so they think that this will be about $35 a month. That's what they're saying. But Apple has tried to do this in the past, and they can't. They can't secure the deals that they need to secure for the prices that would make it a reasonable price for us, the consumer. So I don't know. We talked about this Monday. Hulu was rumored to do that. Now today, Hulu announced they are doing it. It is for real. Sort of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're going to get the deals either.
Yeah, well, speaking of Hulu, so they had an upfront presentation in New York, actually. And as you said, they confirmed those rumors that they're going to be launching their own live TV streaming functionality for 2017. That's what they're looking at, live sports, news, events, all that kind of stuff. You already talked about most of that. No tie-in to the cable TV subscription would be required in that place. And it's kind of similar, actually, kind of reminded me of what Sling has with its kind of bundling thing as far as that's concerned. But anyways, they also announced a collaboration with Live Nation, which would bring virtual reality concerts to the platform, meaning, yes, you, Megan, may someday get a front row seat to a Justin Bieber concert in virtual reality. That's right, you.
A front row seat in virtual reality. So I don't have to leave my couch, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and you get to watch Justin Bieber live in concert.
And even the back of his head?
If he turns around, so, I suppose so.
So yeah, that's back to the, is it VR or is it 360 video? Like, is
yeah,
he
that's
in
true.
A virtual
that's
world?
True. Immersive video then. Okay. So yes, it's right. The terminology does get kind of twisted around back and forth. But right. I don't know. I actually kind of like this. I would love to have access to that. I have to imagine it's going to end up being, I don't know. It seems like the kind of thing that they could actually charge a decent amount for. You want to go see this big, you know, big name musician, like stadium filling musician, and you're getting kind of next to the real thing. You know, you're being placed in an immersive environment in VR. So it's not quite the same, but I imagine if they don't charge something extra for that, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bloomberg reports that Apple is tweaking the interface of Apple Music in an attempt to make it easier to use. This shouldn't be hard, since really anything they could do at this point would make it easier to use. Sources say Apple will officially announce the changes at WWDC next month, and then the changes will arrive in the next iOS update. The change comes at a time when Apple is really pushing its services side in light of the relative slowdown of iPhone sales. So, yeah, I mean, they had to do something with it. It's one of those things that came out last year and everyone was just like, eh, you know, it's sort of partly that everyone already had, a lot of people already had buy into Spotify. Like yeah. They're just, that's where my playlists are. They, you know, you're not solving a problem that I have. So I think that was part of the problem. Partly it was just, it's just not that easy to like add songs to playlists. And I still use it, but it's not my favorite app, and I'm excited about some changes.
Are you a Spotify user?
No.
You're kind of all in on the Apple Music, but is the current state of the app enough for you to just be like, nah, I've had it. I'm going to some, you know, Spotify or something.
No, it's not.
Okay.
I
played around with it for Android. I didn't really have too much of an issue with it, but I wasn't really kind of pushing the functionality on a daily basis necessarily, setting up my own playlist, that sort of stuff. I really didn't do that. I really just kind of tapped into the recommendation engine of it. You know, they would create their own playlists, and they do regularly. And I thought it was actually really good for music discovery from that perspective. The UI and setup really didn't bug me, but I know it bugs a lot of people. I hear about it, you know, you read about it all the time. So apparently it really needs to happen.
Yeah, there's just a lot going on. A lot of like tabs that are not useful to me. But yeah, I was a Pandora user before.
Okay.
And I'm still a Pandora user. And I think that's even better for discovery sometimes for me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like it, but I'm looking forward to some changes.
Apple takes a long time to make changes to their music products, it seems like. You know what I mean? Like iTunes has been around forever. And I think I even saw today, you know, attached to this news, you know, on Twitter, people are saying, well, hopefully they finally, you know, update iTunes. I mean, that's just how long it takes for Apple sometimes to really get in there and make these necessary changes. So hopefully they do. It also kind of sounds like just Apple Music behind the scenes has been kind of all over the place, unstable. You know, Jimmy Iovine, who kind of, you know, is attached to Beats, I guess he kind of goes rogue with his artist negotiations, separate from the negotiations that that Apple goes into. So I don't know, state of disarray, and it doesn't surprise me if that's the case that it would spill into the app and result in kind of a lack of updates to meaningful things.
Mm-hmm.
Life lesson here.
Ooh, man. Life lesson time.
When you want a football and a new bike, all you got to do is locate a critical bug in your favorite social networking app. That's what a 10-year-old Finnish boy did when he reported to Facebook that a bug inside Instagram would allow for someone to delete another person's comments. He reported the bug in February. Facebook's bug bounty program rewarded him with $10,000, making him the youngest bounty recipient the program has rewarded to date. And he pretty much immediately said, all right, I'm going to buy a football and a new bike.
That's an expensive.
That's what you do when you're 10.
That's an expensive football and an expensive bike.
Or, I would hope, you know, he's got a jar for spend and he's got a jar for, you know, right? Save and this jar for give, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I love this story. He's not even old enough to be on Instagram. Like, you know, he's only 10.
That's a good point.
I love that he's the youngest to have found a bug this big. I love that, because I guess a lot of teenagers have been finding bugs. That's pretty common. But 10, he has a twin brother, which, you know, I have twin boys, and I know that, like, probably just competing with each other is probably the drive that got him to where he found this bug. Also, he said he learned on YouTube.
Like, yeah.
He learned how to hack and code.
And code,
YouTube.
Yeah. Since he was 8. So he spent 2 years watching YouTube. Turns out that YouTube, they got something going there.
Yeah, I sometimes think that YouTube parents my children is part, like, YouTube and Instagram and sometimes Pinterest is half, is another parent in our house. Just, you know.
Oh, you're so right. And it scares the living daylights out of me.
But you can learn useful things. I'm not saying.
No, there's really good stuff. There's just also other stuff that, oh boy. Yeah,
there's other useful things that you don't want them to learn on YouTube. Yes,
useful
exactly.
To somebody.
So I love this story. And another story I love about a product I love that I've never even seen in the flesh, but I want. It's
You've been infatuated with this since January.
Since we saw it at CES. Of course, I'm talking about Samsung's smart fridge. It was not a CES dream. It is a reality. Today, Samsung held a launch party to debut my refrigerator. I was not there, sadly. Dieter Bonn over at The Verge has an excellent hands-on review. The fridge has this giant touchscreen. It runs Tizen. You can use it to order food. You can see pictures of what your food looks like inside your refrigerator. You can listen to Pandora. You can draw on the fridge. A lot more. I want this. I do. It only costs $5,799, which I do not have currently to spend on a refrigerator. But a girl can dream.
Just think, more things to break.
Yes, you know. I know. Yeah, we don't even have an ice maker. Like, we don't even have a working ice maker on our fridge. That's what's so sad. But this is, I mean, we've talked about this. You've said you've had this idea forever, like the giant screen, touch screen in your kitchen that you can have calendars on. And
yeah,
that you can,
syncs to your Google calendars or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, I know this has calendar built into it. But
it has calendar. It has Pandora built into it. You can order your groceries on there by a touch of the button.
Every time you close the door, the camera's inside. Take a snapshot of the current state of the inside of your fridge. You can see that picture on the outside without having to open it. And that's neat, one, but two, it's kind of like an energy savings thing. You aren't letting cold air out and, you know, kind of ramping up the energy usage. But then what I think is kind of cool is you can actually assign expiration dates to items that are in there based on that image. So if you've got an image of a, you know, like a your soup leftovers or whatever, you can drag down onto that image, onto that item, like 3 days, and it'll remind you in 3 days, you got to eat that or else you're going to have to throw it away. That's what I need.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's super useful. I don't know if it actually works. I mean, I said hands-on review, but that was, like, in the showroom with the one that they've, like, checked a million times. Are we sure this works? Are we sure this works? And even, like, something on it even didn't work. When Dieter Bonn, in his video, if you watch it, he's like, oh, well, this part wasn't working right now.
Yeah, I think it was the instant, the camera that I was talking about, the photo that was supposed to refresh, and it didn't end up refreshing right away. It probably did eventually. But.
And there's voice controls on it, too, which weren't working.
I think what I fear on something like this is, like, it needs some sort of screen lock on it, because with the ability to purchase food from this tablet, this giant tablet screen that's attached to your fridge at all times, I just imagine mayhem. I imagine all you need is a kid to go over there and be like, oh yeah, I want a banana and I want a toothbrush and I want a blah blah blah, and start pushing buttons. And
we already have that with our Echo. Like, you can order things from Amazon, but you need a secret code.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully there's a secret code built into the smart fridge. All right. Coming up, a glimpse at what is possible when face recognition technology cross-references with social networking. But first, let's take a minute to thank Trunk Club, the sponsor of this episode. There are two types of guys out there, guys who love shopping for clothes but are short on time, and those of you who hate it. Either way, take heart. Now you can get clothes that fit perfectly and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. That's thanks to Trunk Club. I'll be the first to admit that I absolutely fall into the category of not really enjoying shopping very much. Mainly, I enjoy the event, like, you know, kind of going out and doing that. But I'm so far outside of the normal sizing that it's just, it ends up being a big pain to find anything that even remotely fits me. Anytime I find a way to discover new brands that do fit 6'8" me and premium stylish brands at that, I'm a happy camper. And I've now scored 2 pairs of Page pants that fit me better than any pants I've found before. And I'm completely serious when I say that. It's like I've discovered this whole new world of clothes that actually fit me. Trunk Club makes it easy. Just type in your measurements, share the things you like, the things you don't like, your dislikes, and your personal stylist will help you look and feel your best with clothes that fit you perfectly. Sure, your stylist is a professional trained in all the brands Trunk Club offers, but there's so much more to Trunk Club than that. They're going to pick your clothes from over 80 top brands. They're going to ship it right to your door. You'll get your trunk. You'll look through it, kind of try on everything, see what you think, keep what you like, send back what you don't. Let your stylist know why you don't like certain things. Your stylist actually takes the time to understand your unique look. And by the way, if you live in Dallas, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, or D.C., you can stop by one of the Trunk Club clubhouses to work with your stylist in person. How's that for a nice upgraded experience there? Trunk Club is not a subscription service. It's a way to try on awesome clothes from the comfort of home. Shipping is always free, and you have 10 days to try on the clothes. Make a statement at the next big event on your calendar with a look that's handpicked and handpicked just for you and your style. Get started at Trunk Club today. It's premium clothes, expert advice, no work. Thanks to your very own personal stylist at Trunk Club. And Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, which means they have the highest standards in quality and customer service. So get started today. Check it out for yourself. Get a trunk sent to you and dive in and see what you find. That's trunkclub.com/TNT, trunkclub.com/TNT. And we thank Trunk Club for their support. All right. So think for a second of a world where you, random person on the internet, can take a picture of another random person, let's say on the street, run it through an algorithm, and find out their name with impressive accuracy. Then understand that this tool actually exists already, right now. Joining us to talk all about this is our guest today, and that is Ethan Chile. Is it Chile? I'm sorry that I have to ask this, Ethan.
That's all right. It's Chile.
Chile. Okay. I had one of two ways, and of course I got it wrong. From Fusion.net. Thank you so much for joining us, Ethan.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. So first of all, tell us about the service called Find Face and why it's being dubbed as Shazam for People.
Right. So the Shazam for People quote is actually was a quote from a Russian programmer who used it in March to find two women who he'd photographed 6 years ago and never, never been able to get in touch with to give them the photo. And it basically runs by, if you have a photo of someone, you can plug it into Find Face, and it hooks up to the contact. I'm going to butcher some Russian pronunciation here. The Kontaktye, or VK, which is a giant Russian social network. And if someone has a publicly available photo there, it finds them with incredible accuracy.
Wow. Okay. So how accurate? Like, what are we talking about here?
So Find Face is actually the first tool built with the face recognition software from a startup called Entech Lab. Mm-hmm. And Entech Lab, they say their tech is revolutionary, but everyone says their tech is revolutionary. But last year, the results came out in December, this large face recognition competition run by the University of Washington's MegaFace research group ran, and Entech Lab entered, and with a large set, which was more than 500,000 images of more than 20,000 users, they had a 73% accuracy rate, which beat out, among others, Google, who came in second.
That's insane.
About 70%.
That is insane. You have to imagine Google. I mean, and we know that Google has quite a team behind this sort of thing because it's integrated at least to some degree in Google Photos. You know, there's a lot of image and face recognition in there. You can assign faces that appear in your photos. You can assign them a name, and you know, it's going to pick that all apart. What is different here? I have to imagine that the VK.com has some sort of an API that's allowing FindFace to tap into this, right?
Right. So it's a little unclear. And when I tried to get in touch with VK and ask why, you know, how the API was pulling these images, and specifically because it's been used for some pretty seedy stuff so far, why the API access hadn't been pulled, I got no response.
Hmm.
But and likewise, the NTech Lab team is pretty cagey about saying much about their much about how their program works.
Right.
But it's simply a case of, like, because there are so many photos of people in Russia and in Eastern Europe on VK, if they are even remotely publicly listed in the way that you might have publicly listed, like, your Facebook profile picture, it can pull from that.
Got it.
Right. I mean, Facebook has this too. You know, when you post a picture with a friend, they, you know, it automatically pulls their name up. But, you know, you sort of signed up for that when you, you know, are on Facebook, and it wouldn't just be a random person. You think, like, everybody's friends on Facebook. This sounds so creepy to me. But then I was thinking about it, and I thought, well, two decades ago, if someone had said, you know, someone can type your name into a computer and a long list of things about you will show up to anyone, like, I would have thought that was ridiculous. So I'm wondering, is this just the future and we're all just going to get used to it?
I mean, the dystopian science fiction fan in me is going to, and cynic in me is saying yes. But I think that it is the future. It doesn't have to be the future in terms of this going on without any sort of oversight. So what I found personally, a little alarming while reporting the story was that there seemed to be a certain degree of, well, you have to take the good with the bad attitude by some of the designers. And I mean, you see this again and again. And initially I was thinking of comparing it to chatbots and to what happened with Microsoft's Tay chatbot, where after Tay went haywire, there were lots of people understandably saying, well, this is a question of bad design and of thinking about what safeguards you have in place. So the idea that this is out there is not on its own. It might be alarming. It's not necessarily alarming, but when there's so little oversight and there's so little thought given to what's being done to protect people who are, say, being doxxed using this technology, that's scary.
That's a great comparison, because yeah, that is what they said after Tay. There were all these people who have been doing bot research in the field and saying, like, you absolutely made a mistake. Like, we've been working on this. You could have put this filter in. You could have done this. You just didn't. And so right. Is that what you're saying, that Google, Facebook, Snapchat are all working on this? They all have our face print, but they're just not letting people use it to dox us? Is that what's going on?
To some degree. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that I have too much insight into what and how Google or Facebook or Snapchat are using face rec technology. But yeah, this is a case where this tool was sort of built. It was built initially as sort of a date. Like, FindFace is ostensibly a way to date or make friends. The way it was pitched is, oh, you're going to have a photo of someone and you'll plug it into this program and you'll be able to find out who they are and learn about them before you go out or before you become friends, which is, you know, a little bit of a dubious strategy for my money. But yeah, the fact that, you know, it's been used. So part of the reason this came to light is that Devach, which is a Russian 4chan sort of equivalent, was using it to take stills from porn films or just like nude photos of women who weren't necessarily out as porn performers and doxing them to their friends and family.
In Russia, yeah.
In Russia, yes. Mm-hmm. It's only really right. Active in Russia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like, that's the sort of use case where it's like, oh, this needs oversight. This needs a team working on it.
Right? Yeah, and even in light of that, it sounded like kind of the people behind this technology, you know, again, like you were saying, take the good with the bad. Sure, bad things can happen, but there's a lot of good things that can happen with this technology too. I know here in the U.S., there's actually a pretty significant lack of kind of laws and regulations around face tracking. And to a lot of people, it's very alarming because I mean, our faces are very identifiable, obviously. You know, it's kind of like a fingerprint. It could potentially be the kind of thing where years down the line, our faces are our identification for certain things. And, you know, the ACLU, the EFF, they've all worked, you know, they were in 16-month talks, federal talks, on kind of building guidelines around commercial use for facial recognition technology. And they actually abandoned that last June, just basically saying, you know, there was a failure of achieving even minimal rights when, you know, talking with kind of the consumer side of things, you know, regarding things like permission from users to employ face recognition and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if we necessarily know right now what the long-term ramification of that is. Is this something that we... I mean, obviously, you know, this story relates specifically to a service that's just isolated to Russia in this case. I mean, is this something that could potentially tie into, let's say, Facebook services or Google services at some point?
Well, I mean, something like it technically could. I don't see that happening in the same way that this has happened with VK. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that if something like this were to happen with Facebook, there would be a much larger press coverage in a way that it might get pulled much more quickly. But you're absolutely right. There is very little oversight over this, or when there is, it's usually governed by laws that are, you know, 10, 15, 20 right. more or more years old. So are sort of not necessarily tweaked to handle this. So I guess the answer is technically, yes, it could. I don't know that that's likely, but it's possible.
Yeah. I remember this earlier today, a couple of years ago when Google Glass, was a thing, you know, was kind of first kind of, you know, hitting its roadblocks, let's say, once people were starting to get Google Glass. There was a company mm-hmm. that was developing some sort of an app that would allow for facial recognition through Google Glass, you know, in that sort of augmented reality sort of way, to where I could meet you on the street and I would know who you are before I actually ask you your name. And Google actually came down on that and basically prohibited that type of use. So at least in some ways, anyways, the companies recognize kind of the fragility of something like this.
Right. And I mean, I think certainly on the consumer side, there is an incentive to do that because you don't want a story appearing that's saying, hey, people are doxing people via Facebook or via a Google account. Whether or not someone would get doxed by a Google Plus, I won't speak to. it's also just something, I think it's something to bear in mind that as face recognition technology gets more advanced, the uses like this are possible. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's not necessarily a public facing issue that's going to be a problem. So, for example, one of the positive uses that NTech Lab sort of gave me was a case in, I believe, St. Petersburg, but it might have been Moscow. I apologize for forgetting, where there were some arsonists and people used video stills of the arsonists to ID them and to turn them over to the cops, which, you know, is fine, except then you consider, oh, they still do have a 30 or a 27% fail rate. So hopefully that's correct.
Yes.
Or, you know, what the implications of law enforcement having incredibly accurate face recognition technology could be in a broader sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I guess what you're saying is like this, I think Facebook, Google, they all could do this. They're just not doing it. But I mean, it's important to recognize that the ability to do this is here. I mean, I wrote to you about this earlier because, I mean, I'm fascinated by face swapping apps and by Snapchat lenses, like I'm a child, and they're so fascinating. And then I was just like, I think I saw a meme or something where it was like the moment you realize like all those apps are just memorizing your face. And I was like, oh, is that really happening? And I looked up on Snapchat and they say it's object recognition for the Snapchat lenses, not facial recognition. They know what a nose is. They don't know that they're not saving that.
Right.
But then MSQRD, which was the one just bought by Facebook, I looked at their privacy page and there was just nothing. It was like literally a blank page that we're handing over our face to these people.
Right. And so, I mean, that is especially alarming because, you know, at least if you, even if it's something that you don't necessarily like, if you have a privacy policy, you can at least know sort of what you're getting into. So
right.
That is scary. But yeah, I think especially, and the face swapping is sort of a good example of why I think people don't necessarily worry about it, because like, especially something like object recognition can be so sort of fuzzy that, you know, you see a lot of funny, like, glitched face swaps where, you know, I switch my face with a box of tissues by mistake.
Oops.
But, and so the idea is like, oh, the technology isn't that advanced. The technology is there. But if there is, you know, 73% accurate face recognition technology, it is something to think about. It is something to bear in mind and not just write off as this is still nascent technology that, you know, needs much more development to be abused.
Right, right. Well, very interesting stuff. I think, you know, on one hand, interesting in this isolated incident, and by the way, Russia's like huge, so this actually does affect a lot of people. It's just not necessarily, you know, applicable right now immediately to, say, the U.S. But on the other hand, kind of the wider implications of kind of the future of our face, basically, and the right. importance of what we might need going forward, and what's possible to kind of hack that.
Right. And the realms in which we can expect something like anonymity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether we can expect it in day-to-day life and walking down the street where there are cameras.
For sure. For sure. Ethan Scheel, Fusion.net. Where can people find you online when they want to follow your work, like your Twitter ID?
Yeah, mostly on Twitter. It's at Ethan Scheel, which the last name is C-H-I-E-L, and that's all one word. And otherwise, yeah, my work is on Fusion and for Fusion's Real Future section.
Excellent. Ethan, it was a pleasure getting you on today. Thanks so much for joining
yeah.
us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Take care.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Well, we have some feedback today. Mark Dand wanted to write about our conversations about kids and Snapchat, our ongoing conversation about Snapchat, whether it's ruining the kids or not. And he says, it is a poor comment on we adults that we think kids not wanting permanency for their communications to be about secrecy. Isn't it natural to want to communicate with friends and not have it recorded or broadcasted? Absolutely, Mark. I couldn't agree more. It's true. Kids want privacy. We had it when we were kids and they want it. So
they're always looking for the place where they can just kind of be kids with each other and not have pesky mom and dad always right. butting in on
yeah. So, I mean, it's like, it is a good, I mean, it's like that says more about adults than it does kids that we automatically
for sure.
think like
totally.
They're doing something bad. They mm-hmm. might, they mm-hmm. might. And that's what kids do. Sometimes they do bad things. They make mistakes. And
yep.
So, yeah, thanks for writing in.
Thank you.
So after the break, Carrie Davis from Engadget is here. She's from the show In Case You Missed It. She's going to talk about robot running buddies, drones that deliver organs, and other stuff that you might have missed. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. It is a little bit weird that I like that Samsung smart fridge so much that because I have mentioned before that my grocery shopping game is pretty off point. I think something can be off point. It's definitely not on point. I am a mess in the grocery store. I buy all the things I don't need and none of the things I do need. When I get home, I want everything already done for me, but I still like to cook or have someone cook a home-cooked meal for me. It's healthier and cheaper. Where do you start? Blue Apron has you covered. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers all the fresh ingredients you need to create home-cooked meals. Just follow the easy step-by-step instructions. Each meal can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. No overwhelming trips to the grocery store and no more sad takeout. So now, no matter your dietary preferences, Blue Apron makes it a breeze to discover and prepare dishes like seared salmon salad and English peas, arugula and pink lemon, or spring fragola sarda pasta with crispy oyster mushrooms, chervil and fennel pollen, all of this right in your own kitchen. Cook with ingredients that you've never used before. Recipes are between 500 and 700 calories per portion, delicious and good for you. So right now, you can get your first two meals free just by going to blueapron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. So we like to cover a little bit of the quirky tech news on this show, but in order to delve deeper into the weirder web, we needed to call in an expert. Welcome to Carrie Davis, host of the show In Case You Missed It on Engadget. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you so much. That's a perfect introduction.
So before we get into it, tell us what you cover on In Case You Missed It.
So we really set out to be sort of the quirky thing, just like you said, not the main headlines that everyone is already writing about anyways, definitely not the CEO interviews, just the quirk. So I'm really into medical tech, sort of the off the beaten path med devices, a lot of the research happening in different universities, of course, MIT, anything that DARPA puts out, just the end makers, I should also say, we're on Kickstarter a lot.
So you like the scary robots that are shaped like dogs or other animals?
I love those.
Okay, well, let's get started. The robot running buddy, you reported on this. Tell us about that.
That was really interesting. So Puma put that together with an ad agency. They apparently, it took 8 prototypes to get this little tiny robot that looks like a shoebox to follow alongside a runner. It has, I think, 9 infrared sensors on it. It has Arduinos in each wheel. It has a GoPro front and back. So basically, you put it down, you program your time and your distance, and it will run alongside you as a true, honest-to-God coach for, you know, it's not just a timer. You're not just trying to beat a time. You're running against this thing, and it can follow a line and beat you, basically.
It's a pace keeper, basically. Like, you know, it's one thing to run and try and beat a time. I have to. I'm not a professional runner, by the way. Yes, I know. It's kind of painful. It's not my favorite thing in the world. But I have to imagine if you're out there on a track training by yourself, that's one thing. But having something that's there is like a visual reminder of this is the pace that you have to be at in order to kind of beat your time or to, you know, to be ready for whatever's coming up. I have to imagine that's really helpful.
Agreed. And that's why they made it, because, you can see Usain Bolt there. You can actually run his time, his
nice
award-winning time from 2009. So it's so expensive.
I can? Yeah. Like,
I wouldn't even try. I just watch it. Like, that's cute. So it's so expensive, of course, that only Puma athletes get to use it right now. So. Mm.
Well, it's made with Arduinos and like GoPros. So I was looking at that and I noticed in your comments some people were like, well, here's how
so
you can make it.
Theoretically, anybody could use it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
This is a project for know-how, I think.
I know. We have a great show that they could, I'm going to ask them to make this because I need a running buddy.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Okay. So another story is Ehang. We all saw this at CES. It was the autonomous passenger drone, which looked awesome and terrifying. Apparently, they've made a deal with Lung Biotechnology PBC. That's a company that makes artificial organs. They're going to work with the company to deliver artificial organs to people who need them. But this, I don't know, does this sound like a PR stunt, sort of? Because, I mean, artificial organs don't even exist yet.
Right. That's what the internets are saying, because it is a 15-year deal. They were very clear in their press release that it's 15 years and that the deal is for up to 1,000 Ehangs, which would have to be modified to sort of take care of getting these organs. But yeah, we're reporting on it because, of course, it's interesting. I mean, you got 3D printed organs. You have Ehang, which is cool all by its own. Did you guys see it at CES? Mm.
Yeah, I wouldn't get in it. Would you?
They didn't let me. Did you get to get in it?
No. I just said I wouldn't. Ever.
Well, let's let them do some testing first. Then I think I would, actually. Yeah. But yeah, and it's crazy. So in the little cockpit, they have this tablet and you just push the button and it's supposed to be autonomous enough to sort of, you put in your location in like a Google Maps type device and it takes you there. It knows how much distance it needs to land. Yeah. And actually, this company, the company that Ehang did the deal with, right now they're known for making pharmaceutical drugs for people who have lung transplants. So it is very aspirational. So I think it's almost like Ehang, we know, is cool. We all agree. But we all know there need to be so many steps for it to actually sort of happen. This other component is like, oh, God, it's very Jetsons.
Yeah.
Why? I'm trying to understand why opting for this smaller version as opposed to kind of what they're doing now. Would this significantly cut down on the time? Is that why they're proposing this solution?
That is a great question. It was a press release, a very stock press release, and it didn't, you know.
Or it's so, just, like you said, like you're saying, actually, yeah. is what it sounds like then. It's a total PR thing. But mm-hmm. I have to imagine that that would be at least one, you know, benefit, at least I would hope. Because yeah. when it comes to, you know, saving people's lives, I imagine time is of the essence yes. as far as that's concerned.
So. I actually have a good friend in Petaluma who owns a company that delivers organs by helicopter. I sent him this story today. I was like, they're trying to steal your job. And he's like, no, that's not going to. Yeah. You still need people who hold the, you know, the coolers.
With oh, them. Yeah. You need a cooler holder.
Yeah, no, that's, exactly. That's a job. Until a robot can figure out how to hold a cooler.
I know. Seriously. They can do so much.
They're probably building it already. It's already made. Just don't know about it.
The cooler holder 2000. Yes.
Okay. So robots, organs leads right into our next story about robot surgery. This story is going to come up on an upcoming episode of your show. What can you tell us what they learned today about robot surgery?
I love this thing. So this story was just published, and before you and I emailed about it, I had already seen it and said, oh man, this is perfect for in case you missed it, because they already had robots that assisted with surgery, but this thing, it was sort of the reverse. A surgeon assisted the robot who was able to sew up, it was, what was it, parts of a pig, the intestines, I think? Mm-hmm. And apparently, so they did one round with the robot performing the surgery and the surgeons just sort of being there and watching. And then they flipped it and then they compared, you know, the surgeon, the human touch versus the robots. And the robots was better, of course. Mm-hmm. It's better. It was more consistent. Just think about sort of hand-sewn clothing versus what we all have now, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And it's called the STAR. Let me get the right name for you.
So,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, you're comparing hand sewn clothing to, you know, clothes that are kind of manufactured by robots. I'm just thinking of a future of like bespoke surgery, where like I choose to have a human do my surgery. I like the human touch in my surgery. Thank you very much.
That's lovely. What a nice thought. If only people would take it that way. I don't imagine people will take it quite so kindly.
Yeah.
A robot doing their surgery? I can hear my mom in my mind already. She's not pleased.
Yeah. Well, it's the autonomous robot. That's the part about it that's, you know, it's like yeah. nobody, and then oh, they're I doing know. It better. Yeah.
I mean, it really does seem like the future of this sort of thing, just based on accuracy and, I mean, robots just, you know, depending on how they're built, they have the ability to go, you know, microns of space versus mm-hmm. a human that will always kind of have just that tiny little mm-hmm. bit of, well, I mean, that human shakiness, I mm-hmm. guess. So there's probably, this is probably the future.
I am rewatching all of ER, and there's an episode where Dr. Carter has to learn how to suture. It takes him a long time.
Yeah.
He's no
and
robot.
If it takes Dr. Carter a long time. Oof, I can't imagine how long it's going to take to teach a robot.
Yeah. My brother-in-law is in medical school, and I need to send him this story because he'd probably love it. I mean, I think they're all kind of afraid, right, of that yeah. learning.
Yes. He would love it. I was going to say he'd love it, and then he'd drop out promptly and be like, well, my future, I need to figure something else out.
Right, yeah. I mean, there are other things to do besides sewing people up, I guess.
Right. I just wanted to tell you the other interesting thing apparently about it is that it has 3D imaging and force sensing, and that is also what's interesting about this robot, because people can sew anything, right? And so could a robot, except that there's when it's soft tissue, it specializes in soft tissue. So it's things that are going to stretch and move. And so the robot is able to like force it together the right way and sew it. So it is actually really interesting.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people get In Case You Missed It?
Well, we publish every day, Tuesday through Saturday, and either on the site Engadget.com, it's usually featured in the top. If it's not, it's Engadget.com/ICYMI. There it is. And or you can follow me on Twitter, and I usually tweet it out every day also.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Carrie. It was great
thank
talking
you.
To you.
You too. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Don Acri of Amarillo. I'm going to go ahead and say, but I know I'm getting it wrong. Okay, fine.
Texans
Amarillo.
Call it Amarillo.
Oh, because you lived in Texas, so you yes. know. Okay, mm-hmm. Wow, I'm clueless. Amarillo, Texas. That's Zip Dog in the chat room, by the way. Watching, quote, Tech News Today on Twit TV on Jackie Robinson Day 2016. There you go. Man, that TV's bigger than you. It's crazy. We're like humans. We're normal size on that
we
TV
are, yeah.
sitting at
I
the
like
table.
That.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT. And we will try to find it. And we'll find it eventually, probably. Coming up, how's that? Okay, let me try that again. How about you dropping a little beat with that Big Mac? What do you think? But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, who's the sponsor of this episode. If you're hiring, if you don't know where to post your job to find the best candidates fast, well, that's where ZipRecruiter comes in. Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you really need to post your job on all of the top job sites. That's a challenge, but not with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter actually makes it easy. Now you can do that very easily. You just go to ZipRecruiter.com, and with that, you're going to post to more than 100 job boards. That includes social networks, by the way, social media networks like Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, all the places, all the nooks and crannies on the internet where you're going to find the best candidates, and with just a single click. They make it super easy. You just post once and watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. It's all about cutting down time so you can get back to running the business, doing the important work, not having to, you know, go through all the manual labor of finding people where they happen to be. Let ZipRecruiter take care of it for you. Search by skills, location, work experience, and more. And ZipRecruiter's advanced matching technology actually delivers the most relevant candidates based on your criteria. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages. They're going to look great on any screen. You can add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors and more applicants, and find candidates in about any city, any industry nationwide. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You don't have to manage those anymore. You can add multiple users to your account as well, so you've got a team to help you out. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses and is trusted by hundreds of Fortune 500 companies. Whether you're hiring now or whether you plan to hire in the near future, check out their blog for recruiting tips and hiring resources. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT and you'll have access to millions of resumes on ZipRecruiter with thousands of new ones added daily. ZipRecruiter is the fastest way to hire great people. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT to find out more and check it out for yourself. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. All right. I can't say that I spend much time at McDonald's these days, if ever. But if I did, I would have certainly appreciated this cool fusion of fast food and music technology. In the Netherlands, McDonald's had been passing out special placemats to its dine-in customers. This was last month. The paper mats were called McTracks, and they're infused with a super thin circuit board as well as touch-sensitive regions. The diner would download an app that for their phone that contains the samples, the instruments, and loops, and then connect that to the mat. I couldn't tell from the article. I'm assuming that would be via Bluetooth. And the mat would become a controller for the music app. So basically, it's like it's passing the controls on into your phone. I mean, they're, you know, like I've got a hardware controller at home that I make music on. And granted, doing this on like a flat piece of paper probably wouldn't be the best experience in the world, but they look like they're having a lot of fun. I don't know. It looks awesome. It's a cool kind of bonus thing that they did for a month in one place. The Netherlands.
I think that's what Apple Music should be. The next version of Apple Music should just be like a McDonald's placemat.
Mm.
Don't you think? I mean,
because I mean, you go to McDonald's all the time, right?
I don't always ever go to McDonald's, but but yeah, I mean, I could see that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, Kentucky Fried Chicken did something like this. McDonald's made that like headset, the VR headset, uh-huh, the Google, yep, Cardboard. Like they're all getting into the game. But yeah.
Yeah, a little technology.
This appealed
thing
to you and your musical side.
I just think it's neat, right? Like you get a placemat and the placemat controls, you know, you can be creative with a placemat. Like this is the future.
It is.
Being creative in a technological sense with your food placemat is, yes, just weird. The phone obviously is the speaker and, you know, kind of part of the screen is part of the experience. You can even record your voice. So if you're sitting in McDonald's and you're making a really, really awesome track, you can start singing. Won't be weird. Not weird at all.
No. Not if you're laying down those fresh beats.
Yeah,
sick. Did I get that right?
Sick.
Sick. Beats. Sick.
Sick. Fresh. Fresh works too. Totally. Okay. In this day and age, the modern vernacular, right, Chris? Right? He's rolling his eyes at me.
So I have an update to Amarillo. Whippoorwill in the chat room. He said not all Texans say Amarillo. Some might say Amarillo.
Woohoo!
Okay. So
we're both right.
Sense. Yeah.
Hooray for us both being right. All right. Tomorrow's guest will be Father Robert Ballesaire from this place.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see him then. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT and tell your friends. If you know anyone who might like the show, drop them a line. Tell them to subscribe. And I am at Megan Maroney on Twitter. You can find me there.
Yeah, and you can find me there, too. I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, our sick technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day, including Chris. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye.